We're like in central Colorado. We're really close to this good like water hole for cliff jumping. So I go first and I do a backflip and just totally over rotate and like smack onto my back. It like kind of hurt to breathe, but again, like I just got the wind knocked out of me. So I didn't think that much of it. And so we sleep, I had work the next day, and then like an hour into work, I was like, I am not well. I need to go to the hospital. So I got like full CT and they were like, okay, no, actually you're not dying, but you did fracture two ribs.
Oh my God.
Welcome to Something More Human. I'm Sam.
And I'm Elliot. We're a married couple exploring human connection and its impact on ours, our guests, and our listeners' lives.
Join us in creating something more human. Today we have in the studio slash our living room, kitchen, entire apartment, one of my oldest friends. We've been friends since...
freshman year of high school?
That's...
What year is this?
Our 10-year high school reunion is next year.
That's silly.
Have you thought about that?
Nope. I won't be thinking about that again.
my 15 years this year.
That's wild. Okay, we've been friends since the 9th grade, which is pretty cool. I can't remember exactly how we met, but we did go through some high school shenanigans.
I've heard some stories.
And now here you are. I'm so glad that we live in Denver because now we get to see you more often.
Yeah, true. The time that we spent together has like quadrupled plus.
Certainly.
Since you moved here, it's great.
So I wanted to kick off our episode with like a broad reflection from our 9th grade selves. I recall chapters of life where you're like, these are my goals, this is what I really want to do. Do you realize that you are currently living the life that you told me that you wanted to live when we were in college?
Wow, I haven't thought about that. If you asked me what were your goals when you were in college for your life, I would not have said this. I wouldn't have remembered that this was my goal.
Like, I have this memory of you saying, like, I really want a marketing job that lets me freelance so that I can make my own schedule so that I can live in the van. Like, what I want to do is live in a van and be able to make money on my computer. That was before COVID, right? So this is before it was really easy to find remote jobs. Freelancing was much more common. Like, the world has certainly shifted, but that wasn't like, I'm just going to go out and get a marketing job. Like, it took you how long to find basically what you're doing now?
Yeah, totally. So I guess I remember wanting that goal, like, maybe the year out of college. And I didn't want to like go get a job in my degree field because I didn't want to work at an office. I didn't want to work 40 hours a week. I was like living in a bus at the time and corporate life was just not for me. So I like bounced around in seasonal jobs and like was always applying to remote jobs. And like you said, before COVID, it was way harder to get one of those, especially with no actual experience. Mm-hmm. So I think that was probably like 2019 that I decided I wanted for that to happen. And then I started freelancing in 2022. Mm-hmm. So 3 years of like pretty much constantly applying for remote work.
But here you are.
Here we are.
Pretty awesome.
It's cool.
And yeah. Fresh selling your second van, correct? And now you just scored your third van.
Yeah.
And you're going to...
Or second home on wheels.
Right. Second home on wheels. This is your third. And you're going to spend the next, what, how many months? You think 2 or 3 months building it out in California?
Yeah. The hope is to have it done in exactly 2 months and be back in it full time. So the clock starts now.
Yeah, definitely.
A lot of people, I'm going to guess, listening to this episode, don't have experience vagabonding around, living in a van, traveling full time. It seems like loneliness can be a common feeling. I'm curious, A, if that's actually true, and B, when you're experiencing those feelings of loneliness across your entire journey, like starting from the bus to now, how do you deal with it?
Yeah.
Big question.
Big question. Yeah. So I remember like the very first trip that I did when I had my bus, like I'd been living in it, but I was like living in a town and working. So it was like the first trip that I took and I was so excited. Like everybody talks about Moab as a van life hub. And in my mind, like I was going to show up in Moab and there's going to be people living in their vans. They're all going to be my age. They were going to have like my same hobbies. And we were going to like do all this fun stuff together. It was going to be like a campfire every night. And then I showed up in Moab and I was like alone and crying. And I remember like calling my mom being like, I don't think this is actually for me. I don't think this is the life that I want, even though I've been like planning and saving and working for this for the last year and a half. Like now I'm on the road and I'm so lonely. Like I'm bored. It's just me and my dog. Like I haven't met anyone. And it turns out that you can't just like show up in a town and have a bunch of friends just because you live in a van.
Right.
And I think what's changed between now and then is like I'm a little bit better about putting myself out there, or like knowing where to find friends, and I like have hobbies that I'm much more invested in, and that's like pretty much where all of my friendships on the road come from. But I think the biggest change is like an expectation about what it's going to be like.
Sure. Mm.
Like if you're living in a city or in a van, you're not always hanging out with people and having a great time. Like most of the nights in the week, you're like at your house, whether you're alone or with your husband or with roommates. Like you're not constantly just showing up places and making friends, and right. It's not going to change when you're on the road.
What was the transition like between like crying alone in Moab with like your mom on the phone? Like, this is not for me. I thought that I was working towards this life that I'm actually just like alone. How did you like go steadfast through that period? Because you stayed committed. Like you didn't go totally change your life path. Like you did commit to the bus. Then you moved into a van. Like we'll talk about your journey later. Like what was that transition? Were you just like lonely and sad for a while?
Lonely and sad for a while. I stayed in Moab for a couple weeks and made a couple friends. Like I would like go on dating apps and be like, I'm just looking for friends. Like, And that helped a lot. And my mom said, like, just try it for 30 days, like set a reminder in your phone. And after 30 days, if you don't like it, you can come home. And so that was kind of the biggest motivating factor. It was like, yeah, I've only been in the van or in the bus for a week. Like I probably could try a little harder. Mm-hmm. And I think like the biggest thing that changed within those 30 days was I started like planning my travels based on like going somewhere to do something. I wasn't just like aimlessly floating till the next idea came. But after that, I like signed up to work on a woofing farm.
Explain what that is.
Worldwide Organization of Organic Farming. So it's like a work trade situation. So you can like travel around the US, or it's much more common in the rest of the world. And you get like room and board in exchange for some work on the farm. So I signed up for one of those in Bend, Oregon. Mm-hmm. And it was like right across the street from Smith Rock, which is like a really nice climbing area, like very popular. So I signed up for this woofing program in Bend, Oregon. And when I got there was like two other gals who were woofing and were also climbing. So it was like immediate friendship. And then I had like a little bit more purpose and structure, and I was like based somewhere and was able to meet the community and like go to the brewery and make friends and then go climbing with them the next day. So kind of from that point on, where I traveled wasn't just like, oh, what looks fun, but it was like, here's something that I'm going to do. And then having that purpose once I got there, like helped bridge the laying in my van alone, feeling lonely. Mm.
And also structure, right? Like, would you consider yourself ADHD?
I don't think so.
That's something interesting that Elliot and I talk about, is like giving yourself some kind of container or like purpose really helps like guide what you're doing. And when you're just sort of like aimlessly floating and you have unlimited options, it's like fully paralyzing.
Yeah. Well, where were you going with that? You think that structure sort of provided Maria this progress from loneliness, from not knowing what to do, to like where she is now? Yeah, what exactly do you mean by like?
Yeah. Or at minimum, like an anchor, you know, like you're grounded in, sure. Okay, like I know for a fact that I'm like going to sleep in this bed and I'm going to work on this farm for this period of time. And then you can sort of structure your days and your schedule around that, as opposed to like fully free floating out in space.
Well, it's interesting. There's this dichotomy that I would consider, some people might consider like van life the opposite of structure, right? But there's structure in every single situation, right? Like, so what I'm trying to get at is that I think structure is the key to, honestly, I think structure is the key to happiness and success. And the reason I haven't experienced more of it is because I've lacked structure for so long in my life until I met you. And now I'm kind of realizing, like, on a day-to-day basis, looking at you waking up at the same time and doing the same thing every day. I could see that as, oh, that's like words like, oh, that's boring, or that's not the kind of life I want to live. But the kind of life that I've lived for so long is so chaotic. And it's, what has it got me? You know what I mean? It's got me a lack of consistency in every aspect of my life until the last, you know, maybe year or so, or even 6 months. So yeah, I think structure's everything. I think the way that we will become, you know, who we want to be together, and the way that Maria's gotten where she is from structure.
Yeah. I mean, sure. I think there's a common misconception that like, if you put boundaries around something or like give yourself structure, that you're limiting yourself. But by limiting yourself in certain aspects, you're creating freedom in a lot of other areas. So it's interesting to hear it from that perspective. I want to hear, we're going to leave space for some van life stories, but okay, woofing is an awesome experience. You're in the bus. I want to hear about this. I want the listeners to hear about the story of you doing a backflip off a cliff. And I won't give away the ending. You have to listen to the story.
Yeah, so I was on like my second date with my now boyfriend. We've been together for like 3 years, mm-hmm. almost 3 years. Second date, we go rock climbing, and we're like in central Colorado. We're really close to this good like water hole for cliff jumping. So I tell him, like, oh, we should go cliff jumping. It'll be so fun, so spontaneous. And
and if you guys don't know Maria, like, Maria fucking sends. If you, I didn't know what that means, and I think maybe, do you know what that means? Like, yes. Full send? Okay.
Yes.
Also, moving to Colorado, people say it, like, you just fucking go for it. If you know anything about Maria, that has always been your personality, is, like, you're going to go for it, even if it means, like, embarrassment, even if it means something weird. Like, if you think you can do it, you're going to fucking do it.
Or even if it means bodily harm.
Don't give it away.
Yes, exactly. So for better or worse, we go cliff jumping, and it's like a 25-30 foot cliff, pretty deep water. And so we like jump off, it's very fun, we swim over, and then there's like a smaller one, and I'm like, oh, I'm gonna do a backflip off, how cool. And so I like do a backflip off this small one, and Ethan does too, and Ethan's like never done a backflip, but he like crushes it. And so then we look at the big cliff and we're like, yeah, we got that.
The smaller, so really quick, the 25 was the big one.
Yeah.
And you went to the smaller one. What was the smaller one? 10 or 15 feet, maybe?
Probably like 8 to 10.
Okay.
It's gotcha. Like pretty close to the water. So I used to be a gymnast. I was a gymnast in college. So my idea of like doing backflips, like you're rotating yourself. But when you're jumping off of something really high, you want to just like kind of fall.
Mm-hmm.
So I go first and I do a backflip and just totally over rotate. Like jump off with as much power as I would need if I was like on the floor, and over rotate and like smack onto my back. And the water's super cold, and you also have to kind of like rock climb out of the water. So I'm like immediately in a lot of pain, but I also just like got the wind knocked out of me. So I'm like, okay, I know what's happening. Stay calm. Like you have to stay calm if you want to swim to the edge,
mm-hmm.
having just knocked all the breath out of you. So I like look up at Ethan, he's like immediately into action and jumps in, and he's like helping me swim over to the edge and like get out. And we take a look, and like my back is just like already bruised. I'm like, okay, well, yeah, I just slapped the water from 25, 30 feet. Obviously, it's going to be bruised. It's like, it's no big deal. And it like kind of hurt to breathe. But again, like I just got the wind knocked out of me. So I didn't think that much of it.
And it's cold.
And like, it was cold water. Yeah. Yeah. So no big deal. Like that was pretty embarrassing. I would like to go be alone now because I'm embarrassed that this guy that I have a crush on, I just like totally messed up this backflip. So we start driving back to where we were staying at the time, which was like, I don't know. It was like 2 hours away. And during the drive, I'm just like starting to get a lot of abdominal discomfort. And he's like very concerned. He's like, I think we should go to the ER right now. And I'm like, nah, it's fine. Everything is good. Like I just hit my back pretty hard. Like it's fine. It's probably unrelated. And so we sleep. I had work the next day. And then like an hour into work, I was like, I am not well. I need to go to the hospital. So I go to the hospital and they like initially thought that I had ruptured my...
Ooh.
Spleen and my diaphragm. So I got like full CT and they were like, okay, no, actually you're not dying, but you did fracture two ribs.
Oh my God.
And the thing that you do for fractured ribs is nothing. There's nothing you can do. Like you can't put a cast on it or like,
is it because they're floating?
Well, it's like, because like, what are you going to do? If you put a cast on it, it's not right, really going to do anything.
Right.
At least fingers, like you can tape together, like
right collarbone. When you have a sling.
Yeah, when you have a broken rib, like you just have to deal with it until it heals.
Yeah, exactly.
And what was that like for you? Because you are very active. You're always climbing. You're always hiking. You're always swimming. You're always doing something. So, like, what was the recovery like? Like, what did you do for the next month or 2 months or whatever it was?
Yeah, they said like to do everything as tolerated, basically, which was nice that I didn't have a set time. But they said like 6 to 8 weeks is probably when I'll feel well enough to start. Getting back into activities. And after 3 weeks, I was like climbing again and swimming and stuff and going rafting, which was pretty painful. But as you say, like, I can't really sit still. Life gets pretty boring for me if I can't climb or kayak.
Right.
So yeah, it was painful, but definitely a learning lesson not to try to impress your crush on a cliff.
And have you done a backflip off of something that high since?
No.
No.
So you learned your lesson, or the opportunity hasn't.
No, there's been many opportunity, and I'm like, I should redeem myself because I have this mental block towards it now that I'm like, I'm even scared to just jump off and not flip. And so I should just do it. But I don't know that I could jump off of a cliff and like just fall backwards instead of doing the flip. Like, I think I almost certainly would over rotate again.
Right.
Well, that's also like in your muscle memory.
Hmm. And then I'm wondering how difficult it is for athletes, like, you know, especially me following basketball and football, like tearing an ACL, going into like a dig route in football, you tear an ACL, like the mental block that must happen when you get back on the field every single time you do that route, you're like, am I going to tear an ACL again?
Totally.
And I'm wondering, did you have, I'm assuming you had some injuries, right? And as a gymnast, didn't you say you had some minor injuries, or did you have any major injuries as a gymnast?
No super major injuries, but I had like a lot of concussions and some like minor stuff. You're kind of just always in a bit of pain.
Yeah.
In gymnastics, but luckily nothing major.
Yeah. And concussions from like literally hitting your head, falling on your head off of a balance beam or something, or what?
Yeah.
Wow. Jeez, I didn't know that. Concussions. That's pretty hardcore. Also a little scary.
Yeah, concussions suck.
Yeah.
What about going back to like structure, woofing, deciding that you would travel with like an end goal in mind, not just sort of like aimlessly? Obviously now you live in a van with a person, but back when you were in the bus, you were by yourself. I won't call it a fear, but I have a distaste for doing things alone, which I'm working on. What, like, how do you deal with doing things alone, or like getting over the fear of doing things alone?
And do you enjoy it?
Yes. I used to do things alone like way more often. And because I was doing it so often, it didn't feel scary. It was like the norm and it felt really empowering, and I did enjoy it. And didn't like really think twice about like being in the bus alone and going to a coffee shop or a brewery by myself, or like going for the hike by myself, or even backpacking. Mm-hmm. And now that I'm with someone so often, like those little things all of a sudden feel scary again, like they did when I first got into the bus.
Interesting.
So it's very much about like how often you're doing it. So if it's like something that you want to do is like feel comfortable going out alone and doing something alone, the best way to get over that is to just like do it and then keep doing it. Mm-hmm. And I think still like when I'm feeling that discomfort about doing something alone now, it's so cliche, but I literally think every time, like, I'm never going to see any of these people ever again.
True.
Which is especially true for me, like traveling. I really probably am never going to see anyone again.
So is the primary worry, the primary insecurity, like what people are thinking about you when you're alone? Is that like the number one thing that you're talking about, going from like, I got used to it, it was great, and now that I'm been living in a van with my partner for 3 years, it's hard again to do things alone? What is the primary driving factor of that fear or whatever it is?
I don't think that my thought pattern is like that cognitive. Like, I'm not thinking, oh, they're gonna think I'm lame, they're gonna think I'm like don't have any friends. It's right. Like much more abstract.
Gotcha.
But when I try to put it into words, like that is what it boils down to, is like, am I doing something uncool? And what are other people going to think about this uncool thing that I'm doing?
I think what something I admire so much about both of you is that you do things alone, or like that you are open to overcoming that discomfort often. And something I've been thinking about doing for myself living in a new city is, I know that that's a point of growth that I could water. And yeah, it's just interesting to think about, like all things in life, practice makes progress. Right. So yeah, it might be uncomfortable. And the next time might be uncomfortable. And the time after that might be uncomfortable. But if you do it often enough, you eventually become used to doing things. Even like travel. Like, we spent so much time traveling in 2023 that I got used to reading airport signs so well that when we were in Europe, I was like, oh, we go here, there. And you're like, wait for me. How do you know which way we're going? Like,
I felt very much like my dad. Which is like just leaning on my mom entirely. And I was like, I'm not trying to, I'm trying to be autonomous, but like, this bitch knows what she's doing, and I'm just gonna like, I'm just gonna follow her lead. So I really appreciate that about you.
Thanks.
And that you've exercised, you know, being alone on your own. Like, you would say that you're much less apt to do it, or you don't like to be alone on your own as much, but like, you've gone to Palm Springs by yourself. You went to that major conference by yourself. Like, I wouldn't have gone to the conference in Orlando were it not for you.
Yeah.
You know, so you've really exercised that muscle. But for you, Maria, since you're not doing it as much, is it something that you want to maybe create a, like a challenge for yourself, like make it fun? So it's like, okay, like once a week, you know, I'm going to tell my partner, I'm going to force myself to do this one thing by myself, because I need to keep that muscle exercise so that I don't feel this way, because I don't, you know, life is so short. Like, we don't want to feel these things all the time. Like, we want to be able to go out by ourselves and enjoy it. So is that something that you can see yourself doing or wanting to do in the future, is committing to going out and being by yourself at least once a week or once a month or whatever it is?
Yeah, I think that would be super healthy for me and for our relationship. Mm-hmm. I think it's a piece of the puzzle that's becoming a pain point in my current van life status, which is that like my partner and I are always in the van and always traveling, and we don't always have community around us. And so I've found that it's much more difficult to like make friends on my own or do hobbies on my own, because it just requires so much planning. Like if I want to go for a hike while he goes mountain biking, we have to like figure out where the van goes and like where does the dog go. It's just like way harder to do things alone. And so it's like, okay, well, we'll just go hiking and biking both together. And that's really great from a relationship perspective, but not super great for my independence.
Right.
So I think the doing things alone ties directly into that. And it's like, go meet friends alone, go to the coffee shop alone. Don't work inside the van all day. Like go do something by yourself instead. So that's definitely on my list of things to do in 2024. And like when the new van is built, having more structure for us to do our separate things and have separate friends and like a little bit of life outside of each other. Cause right now we're just like basically the same person.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I think you're starting to touch on some of like the pain points of van life in general. And I know, I mean, I follow van lifers on YouTube, like the era of van life that we're in, especially with respect to content creation, is super glorified. And of course there are like really awesome things about van life, but I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit more about the pieces that people don't share as often, or like the sacrifices that you've had to make in order to cultivate this life.
Yeah, I think there's the really obvious ones. There's like, you can't just take your trash out to the street. You have to like go find a trash can, and like, oh, if you don't have a bathroom in your van, then you have to go find a bathroom multiple times a day. And if you do have a bathroom in your van, then you have to go dump your bathroom multiple times a week. Like, so just all those little chores are not totally shown in, on social media. And I think it's like kind of coming around to influencers showing that also, but there, I would say there's a lot of pain points that are less obvious. And for me, one of them has been like the loneliness that we talked about, but also the loss of structure in like my day-to-day life. I'm someone who really likes a morning routine. I like to get up around the same time and like have my little coffee, have my little meditation, maybe do a little bit of yoga. And even though it seems like on the surface you could totally attain that in van life, there's just so many other things that come up, especially if you're living with someone else. Where like, oh, I wake up and maybe I'm not parked in a spot where I can do those things, or I have to go find a bathroom, or where we have to like drive 12 hours to the next place today. So there's just like so many things that come up that make a day-to-day schedule or routine really difficult. And that definitely has a role in my like mental health. So that's like something that I'm constantly trying to strive for, and like might get into a good groove for a little bit, and then it just like blows up the next time we're in like a new location.
Sure.
So that's really hard. You have to like definitely be able to adjust to those changes and go with the flow.
Okay, talking maybe more broadly about vulnerability, how do you navigate this sort of balance between independence, which we're starting to touch on, and then community, right? Like allowing yourself to be vulnerable with new people that you make so that you're building these meaningful relationships. Also like throwing in the wrench into the situation, like sometimes you're a solo female traveler, or like if you are alone, like the sort of safety components that come along with like you're a young woman in a van. Like how do you navigate sort of the one end of the spectrum of vulnerability and the other end is like hyper awareness of people's intentions, kind of?
Yeah. I'm definitely cautious about like that bad end of the spectrum of like having to be hyper vigilant.
Oh yeah, vigilant. There you go.
But I think finding meaningful connections is also hugely important to me. So I guess the way that I've dealt with it is by finding connections mostly in like the hobbies and the areas where I feel safe. So I'm not like as much going to the middle of a city and going to a brewery and finding friends to meet that way and be like, oh yeah, I live in my van. It's right outside. It's my home. It has all my stuff in it. But knowing that like I feel safe in the climbing community. And so like I'm going to climbing areas and making friends in that like realm where for better or worse, there's like some amount of safety and trust in the other people that are there. And then in terms of vulnerability, like especially in the last year, the friends that I've made in like the last 12 months are, I would say, some of the more meaningful relationships that I've made on the road. And all of those relationships like started out as like, oh, we do the same things. We both live like nomadically on the road and we have that common interest. And so we start hanging out. And it's not until like something happens in one of our lives or we reflect on something that's happened in the past that's like negative and therefore vulnerable to talk about. And it's like after bonding over that, you feel so much more connected. And I think it's hard when you're meeting people all the time in new places to like jump into that vulnerability. You don't want to be like, oh, let me tell you about my traumas.
Sure.
And you also don't want to be that person who like you only go hiking with once a month and you know nothing about their life. That also doesn't feel good.
Sure.
Yeah.
So I don't know that I've quite like figured out the balance, but definitely like leaning into areas where I already feel safe. And then when I feel even safer with people that I've hung out with, like being able to be vulnerable and ask them questions about like their life and without prying, obviously, but just like, yeah, the human connection part for me always comes after hanging out for a while. I've never been someone who's just like, oh, I just met you. We're best friends. Here's everything about me. So yeah. It never feels very good.
Do you feel like there's more of like a pull to do that because of the structure that you have or the schedule that you have? We haven't really talked about your routine or your routes, like where you go. You're always all over the Southwestern United States. You've been to New Zealand. But I guess what I'm asking is, you know, is it difficult to maintain the friendships when you're in so many places seemingly at once? And also, do you feel like this need to sort of, you know, reveal more of yourself right away, knowing that maybe I won't see these people, you know, the next time? That's how I feel like when Albuquerque, right? We're only there every 2 months now. So it's like, I feel the need to see everybody and tell them all the things, so many things all at once, because I might not see them for the next couple months. Does that sort of change? Does that schedule that you have being on all these places change the way that you interact with these specific people, knowing that you have less time with him than a normal person might in the city?
That question brought up this memory of the first time that I went to Joshua Tree National Park, which is like, there's a campground right in the middle of it. All the climbers go, especially in like the winter months. And it's very much like a community vibe. And I remember the first time I went, like we're meeting people, we're hanging out with them. And I'm like doing the thing that I guess I grew up doing to make friends, which is like asking questions, like, what do you do when you're not here? Where are you from? And I quickly learned that the other people that were there, like, were not at all interested in, like, answering those questions or asking questions like that to me. And it felt really hurtful at first. Like, I remember being like, no one likes me because they, like, don't want to answer my questions about what they do for work. And I think the realization that I had after that trip was that the questions that I was asking weren't, like, aligned with the values of this community.
Interesting.
It wasn't that they didn't want to talk to me or be my friend or that they were just like too nomadic for friendships. It was that like they don't really care about what you do for work. They care about like who you are as a person. And instead of like the superficial part of like how much money do you make, maybe they care more about like how hard do you climb? Do we climb similarly? You know,
sure.
Like can we go climbing together? The questions of like, where are you from? Well, I'm not from anywhere. I live on the road and I don't really care about the town that I grew up in.
Right.
They don't care about what I do for work and they're not attached to their identity of what they do for work. So they like couldn't care less about talking about it to some stranger that they just met. Like they would way rather talk about like, I don't know, places to travel or like climbing or just like other things that are more valuable to them than like work or where your hometown is.
Yeah. It seems like a uniquely American thing.
Oh my gosh, you took the words out of my mouth.
But also what I'm learning, I keep talking to you about like how important like language is to me, the power of language, like the power that you possess as a person asking someone a question, but also the power that you possess given the opportunity to answer a question. And like what, like we have the we're not really strangers card deck, and the question that we pulled yesterday at the park was, you know, what would you title this chapter of your life? Mm-hmm. And like just that question, like what it can do for someone, I feel like is very powerful. Like the, you know, people don't get opportunities to ask those questions very often. And so like asking someone what they do for work, no wonder people don't want to answer that. Like there's so much stress revolved around having to make money for a living. But like, you know, what's this route like on this rock? Like that's obviously much more suitable for a person like that, right? And just that question yesterday that we asked each other it kind of opened up this entire conversation that you and I had, and it ended up being one of the best days that you and I have had together in like recent memory.
Yeah,
you know,
I think what's interesting about this conversation is that asking people questions seems like something that we should all be able to do and that it shouldn't take any work or effort. But I feel like knowing how to go with the flow in a conversation and ask questions and then ask meaningful questions is actually more challenging than, I don't know, the misconception that I had at least, and something I'm learning from you. Like, you, Elliot, are so good at asking questions. And something I learned from you is, like, often I'll take people's answers at face value. But, like, what if you just ask one layer deeper? Like, what does that mean to you?
Or why?
Yeah, why did you make that decision?
It's almost like a defense mechanism, because, and this brings up, we're watching Love on the Spectrum. We just finished it. Incredible show on Netflix about, like, autistic people with autism dating. And like every single time the conversations are awkward, we're like, you're not asking questions. Like, they just need to ask questions. Like, one person's like asking a question, the other person's responding and then not asking back. And it's like the key to like a you know, a really fruitful conversation, in my opinion, is to just to keep asking questions, which is something that we're learning more about. And the question that I kept asking Ramon when he was talking about my friend who's a marketing, owns a marketing agency, we're trying to, you know, workshop this idea out, and I kept asking him why, and just that one word, that one question in any sort of context is like very, very powerful. And we've talked about this on a previous episode, but if like you're worried about how you're going to meet people or how you're going to interact at this particular conference or this party, like just ask questions. And you're saying, well, maybe it's a little more complex than that, like knowing what to ask or when.
Yeah, but
that's overthinking to me, in my opinion. It's like,
sure.
You know, once you ask one question, generally the conversation starts flowing. If they don't ask a question back, just ask another one.
Yeah. Know? I mean, I think that it's back to this like practice makes progress thing. Like, it can be uncomfortable, so just do it more often. Mm-hmm. But sometimes for me, like, I'll turn to you in moments where we're having conversations with people to ask a question, because I'm just listening and I'm present. And so there is, my mind is just blank. Like, there's not a question in the queue.
I wish I knew what that was like.
Yeah, and our brains operate totally differently. Mm-hmm. But sort of in this vein of, like, meeting people, getting to know them, the way that this culture is different. Do you think, I mean, how many years from the bus to now, like, how long have you basically been in a four-wheel type living situation, living nomadically?
6 years.
Do you think that you would still be doing this 6 years in if you didn't have these specific hobbies?
That's a really good question. I don't think I would.
Mm.
Because the reason I do it is so closely revolved around getting to go to places to climb or bike or whatever that are like seasonally appropriate. And I pretty much base all my travel off of that. I think if I didn't have outdoor hobbies and my hobby was going to coffee shops to make connection or, I don't know, something else that was more like inside or city based, I probably would have loved to do van life and like explore and then been like, okay, now I would like to settle down in a community where I can do all those things.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
But the seasonality of the things that I like to do like really makes me want to continue traveling in some way or another.
And that's, I'm hearing you say, tell me if this is accurate, that is how you meet all of the people that you meet on the road, is through having this common hobby. Like, you're not kind of bumping into them at a brewery or a coffee shop.
Yeah, I would say 98% of the time, it's like either meeting them outside while doing these hobbies or especially when I was traveling alone, I would like join a lot of Facebook groups for places that I was going, like specifically for climbing in the area or paddling in the area. And I met a lot of people through those, but it was always like, here's our common interest and we can start there.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never been good at like showing up somewhere where that common interest isn't already established and being able to connect with someone.
Mm.
I would love to work on that, but it's also really scary.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
So
I want to go back to the question. This chapter of your life seems like, in my opinion, I mean, it's different for you because you're living it, but it's fucking cool. Like, it's really, really cool what you're doing. What would you call it though? What would you like title this chapter of your life? If you're going to write a memoir, this is maybe chapter 20, how old are you?
I'm 26.
This is chapter 26. Like, what is this chapter called?
Oh, can I make a prequel question to that?
Oh, wow, you're pulling a me, huh?
I am.
Nice.
Elliot does this thing where I'll ask a question and then he asks a totally different question.
Just rooted in, it's rooted in wonder, you know?
Yeah, no.
It's because he's good at asking questions.
This is true. Well, we haven't yet, like, told the audience kind of an overview of your journey. Like, we've talked about a bus, we talked about a van. But, like, can you just do a super quick timeline of, like, college, bus, nursing school, van, second van, third van, like, super quick, and then answer to present day, what might the title of this chapter be?
Okay, so high-level overview. I graduated college and bought a bus. It was really old and rickety, and I traveled around in that for like a year and a half and got tired of breaking down, so I like put all my eggs in one basket and got a van, and I had that for 4 years. And in that 4 years, I went from like working seasonally at restaurants and then realizing I wanted something more. I started nursing school. I made it a semester through nursing school and realized there's no way I can be a nurse. This is not for me. So I dropped out of nursing school. And I would say that's when I like went really headfirst into climbing and mountain biking and like really traveling exclusively for these sports. And that was almost 2.5 years ago. So since then, I would say, so I'm like kind of split between two titles that I feel like this chapter needs. The first one is adventure. I feel like since I dropped out of nursing school, I've like gone all in all parts of adventure of all parts of my life. Like I started this new career path and then like switched it again to make it even more freelance. And so that's very adventurous for me. I'm also like adventuring in the more traditional sense of the word of like learning new climbing styles, learning new sports, like going further and harder. So like very adventurous traditionally. And then like adventurous in having like a set, almost set cycle that we do around like the southwestern US. And so we're like building community in all those places, and that feels really good and brings me to my other title of the chapter, which is kind of like community. Like I'm feeling now that I finally have the community in van life that I first wanted when I first went to Moab 6 years ago.
That's a big deal.
I feel like I have people, places, pretty much anywhere that I go, and whether I'm like connecting with them on the internet or I'm just like able to meet these people in real time there, or like having mutual friends with other people that I've met on the road, that like feels really meaningful. So maybe the title is adventurous community.
I like that combination of things.
I feel like that's the recipe for a pretty good life. Adventure and community.
Mm-hmm.
That rocks.
Mm-hmm. This is my favorite part of every episode, where we pull out like themes, strategies, tips. Some that I'm hearing are practice makes progress. Mm-hmm. So whatever the thing is that you're experiencing fear or discomfort, whether that's meeting people, whether that's trying something new, whether that's being alone, like doing it often makes progress and eases the discomfort. Another one that I'm hearing is if you want to meet new people, get invested in a hobby. And like you will automatically have a foundation of connection because you are interested in something similar.
Totally.
Another one that I'm hearing that's a little less explicit is like have goals that scare you. So like I'm sure there were moments, especially building out the bus, like the very first thing you ever did, where you were like, what am I doing? Or like, what have I gotten myself into? Or like, is this a good idea? And like, look where it's taken you in 6 years.
Right.
And where will you be in 6 more? So doing things that feel like they scare you, but that are authentic to how you want to build your life. And it's okay to change your mind.
Absolutely.
Love that.
Yeah, I feel like it's awesome. We're great friends living in the same place for right now. We're both sort of in the same place of that. It's like buying a new van and having to kind of start all over in some ways is a little scary financially and just even creatively and like, you know, logistically. And then you and I
mm-hmm.
being where we are right in this moment as of this weekend, mm-hmm. sort of doing this
mm-hmm.
together. It's sweet that we both get to sort of do that at the same time and feel this sort of some of the same things in terms of like risks and being a little worried about the future, but those are good things.
It almost feels to me a little bit like that's what life is about, right? Like it seems like sometimes the monotony of life is what causes a lot of dissatisfaction in life. Mm-hmm. Like, all I do is wake up, I go to work, I come home, I sleep, I wake up, I go to work, I come home, I sleep. Are there ways in that routine to add adventure or to mm-hmm. add things that scare you or that are uncomfortable for you? Like, even we've been going to a lot of networking events. Like, it's really uncomfortable, and I would say most of the time I'm glad that we went.
Yeah, absolutely. Before we were talking about routine being like the key to success or happiness, and now we're saying, I know this is not what you're saying, but it's interesting, you know, the monotony of routine sort of dumbing down life a little bit and not getting uncomfortable. But I think the monotony comes from doing something 8 hours a day that you don't like doing, right?
Sure.
But if the routine is something that you enjoy doing 8 hours a day, then that routine is great. And it's what will put you on the path, in my opinion, to happiness and open the doors for, you know, a multitude of other things. So it's funny that, yeah, you're right. Routine can be really bad or routine can be really great depending on the circumstances.
Yeah, I'm not though saying routine, but I'm saying like monotony. Like,
right.
Like going through the motions.
Mm-hmm, sure.
I kind of feel like routine, at least in my life, sets me up to create the life that I want. Like, the routine is not so much the monotony or like the things that I have to do every day. The routine is like enough structure and the knowledge of what I want to do and being able to like put what I want to do into my day. And like, that's how I view a routine. It's whether it's like work or travel or podcasting, it's like, there's the goal and then here's the structure to put that into my life. And if you're putting that into your life in a way that's not fulfilling, that's when you get the monotony or like,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The discontent for life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's great. I love that.
That reminds me of another theme we talked about, which is like providing yourself structure and boundaries in a way that opens you up in other areas. So like being anchored in an overall structure or an overall season or an overall schedule allows you to put intention into other areas.
Mm-hmm. Maria, thank you so much.
Thank you guys. This is so fun.
We love you. We want to know that we're like really proud of you and you're doing some really cool shit.
I could say the same about you guys. Look at this.
Yeah, this is great. This is really, really neat. And thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Sam and I want to thank you so much for listening to Something More Human. If you're enjoying the podcast and want to support us, there are plenty of no-cost, minimal effort ways you can do so.
For starters, you can subscribe to the show on your favorite listening platform. You can leave us a 5-star review, drop us a comment with a topic you'd like to hear us discuss in an upcoming episode, and you can also keep up with us on Instagram and TikTok. Give us a follow there at Something More Human. Thanks so much.
Thank you.